You're listening to the Yeshiva of Newark podcast. I'm your host and curator, Rabbi Avram Kivalevich, and I hope you enjoy this episode. If it's the 26th day of Tishrei, this must be Ris Chodaraisa. Oy, I am primed for Kedusha Law, as we have with us Rabbi Yosef Gabriel Bechofer and Rav Meir Schiller. Let's talk first about what was circulated in many areas. Rav Moshe Hauer from the OU, Rav Yaakov Neuberger sending a letter to a number of YU Rabbonim who were wanting to know how this Shmini Atzeres Simchas Torah would be different and how it could be different and how it should indicate the anniversary of the Retzach of last year and what Klal Yisrael has gone through for the whole year, and yet still remain a Simchas Torah that had Simcha and Rikud and Alisas HaNefesh with the Torah. They gave their Eitzes, and people can find those things online still. In the Bote Knisiot and the Shuls and the Besmedish and the Shtiblach that you were in, did you see any sort of reference, connection? Was there some way of being koilil, the yard site of the Harigas? Was there something that happened that you felt at least satisfied something about the commemoration of what had happened over the year?
You know, in the places I davened and the places I frequent, there is no mention of any war taking place, ever. So not just Simchas Torah, Shmini Atzeres, but, being within the hardcore center of Muncie and davening in Rahmstivke, Toshna, and Chabad, I did not encounter anybody advocating any change, or anybody discussing, for that matter, anything taking place in Eretz Yisrael whatsoever. So, no.
Rabbi Yosef Gavriel, what about you?
Of course I made sure to mention the war. What kind of question is it? Of course I made sure to mention the war. I mentioned it has to color our celebration and that we have to sing slow songs. We should remember what happened. Well, obviously. I don't need to see Neuberger or Hauer in order to know how to do that. You can't figure that on your own. What are we, morons?
Sometimes we are moronic in the sense that we need a little bit of a wake up. So tell me what you did, Mr. Non-Moron.
We did. The first Hakafa, the last Hakafa. We made sure to sing slow songs and made sure to mention the Simchas Torah, how it was last year, how is this year. After we remember all these things, we have to do all this for the schools of the soldiers, the wounded, the evidence, et cetera, et cetera. Should we have the Ili Neshama for those who are killed? I mean, basics.
Do you think that the smaller the kehillah is, the easier it is to sort of shape
the size? I'm sure large kehillahs have just and perhaps even more understanding of the momentous antecedents of this event, obviously.
Was there a commitment towards the next year in terms of what was going on in Eretz Yisrael? Or was it?
No, I mentioned Yom Kippur. I didn't mention it. So we start as a more of a commemorative. I didn't mention the commitment about neither I was mechazik limud Torah for the coming year. No, I was mechazik myself.
To keep on dedicating things for.
I didn't think it was necessary. I think everybody understands very well what the situation is.
Yeah. I I'm not sure because I heard quite a number of reports in my area of how wild and crazy it was, and they'd never seen anything like it. And, you know, there was quite, you know, people were, again, making the usual liquor jokes, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not sure if it was as widespread.
I just like to add, again, it's a point we've raised in the past and discussed. The deeper you go into Haredi environs, the more the community becomes insular and emotionally satisfying. In other words, it is a world, it's full of life and happiness and sorrow, and it does not look outside its windows very much at all regarding anything. So I think you have to understand this as part of that. It's not that they look outside and don't see things. They never go to the window to look outside. And that's part of their weakness and part of their strength, that there is no outside.
Barry Bechhofer's Kehillah and others aren't necessarily as insulated as yours, but they definitely consider themselves yeshivish, Haredi, and still they are aware. So is it a Hasidic phenomena?
Well, no, that's why I said the deeper you go into Haimish environs. So I suspect if you go in sort of hardcore Lakewood-esque places, it would be the same thing as well. The bigger your walls are and the less the slits you have in the walls, the less you see what takes place outside your walls. That's all.
So there are people who are like this walking Chillul Hashem Rabbi Deutsch, who deliberately set up walls.
Let's talk a little bit about something that Rabbi Bechhofer alerted me to, and that is the uvda that in the yeshiva world, this week, the week between Yisro Chag and Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan, has turned into sort of like a miniature sort of camp vacations, yeshiva light learning week. You'll learn, but there's also going to be organized vacations, trips. The justification was always this would provide a battery recharge for the long winter's man ahead. And now there was a call from Rav Moshe Hirsch Shlita to cancel, and Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef also writing a letter for the Sephardic Kehillas that this should be canceled for this week, notwithstanding the great expenses that have already been dedicated towards this. Doesn't it seem like a little bit of an October surprise?
Yeah, listen, they're not going to appease the religious Zionists with this. Religious Zionists, obviously, we'll see, is just too little, too late. I think it's very bad PR, and they realized it. Besides that, they messed up because they made that anti-Jews rally on October 7th, and that already gave them a very bad name. So they're sensitive to how bad they look in other people's eyes. So this is like, okay, at least not kind of pictures of people going on Tulane all over the country.
Would you agree, Rav Meir, that this sounds like pulling the plug just in order to save face?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, sure. There was a sense of embarrassment they have about the whole thing. It's not a conscious embarrassment, but there is a sense of subconscious embarrassment, I think.
Rav Yosef, since you brought it to my attention, why don't you read what this Rav Deutsch's response to the Rabbonim was?
I was like, you're punishing me for this. I have to read this Narish guy. Maran of Rosh Yeshiva, the leader of the Jerusalem faction, Rabbi Usher Deutsch, has special instructions to Yeshiva students in Avreichs. The occasion between times, the Chufshas Bein Hazmanim, should not be shortened. The Yeshiva rules and regulations are based on the holy mountains, Yisrael and Bahari Kodesh, and we have no permission to change anything in them. We must strengthen ourselves in Torah and Tefillah.
Yisoidus and Bahari Kodesh. Therefore what? Therefore we should go on these, I don't, it's Bahari Kodesh, yes, to go on these trips? It's Yisoidus, yes. Yeah?
Whatever there is in their world is Yisoidus and Bahari Kodesh.
I don't remember, even though it only started about 15 years ago or whatever it happened, that's already Yisoidus.
No, he also means not to shorten. No, he means not to shorten. Made as my name. Yisoidus and Bahari Kodesh means, I think one of them at least said that they should go back to Yeshivas early. So he's saying, Chassid Shalom, go back to Yeshivas early.
Let's just remember, a year ago, they did.
Maybe not Rabbi Deutsch.
Rav Meir and I talked about, on our old program that's still around, our Meir Nechacham, we talked about the need for summer recharge. And I guess the idea that you need some sort of pep in order to get through a winter's man makes sense. But obviously, this is as man chirum. Going on the other side of the pond here for a bit, if you listen to the candidates, both of them are invoking chirum, how terrible it's going to be if the other ascends to the presidency. I want to play with you a little bit later our discussion about this 4 years ago. It's in our archives if you go search on Rischa Daraisa. First of all, I mentioned to Rav Meir yesterday a kol koire, a hachrosa that came out saying how important it is for the Torah world to go out and vote. I shared, I think, with both of you, the letter from that Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote. Rav Moshe stressed the aspect of Hakaras HaTayv to the country that we live in, showing ourselves that we are indeed proper citizens and recognize the significance of this country and the freedom of religion that it affords us. On reaching the shores of the United States, Jews found a safe haven. The rights guaranteed by the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights have allowed us the freedom to practice our religion without interference and to live in this republic in safety. A fundamental principle of Judaism is Hakaras HaTov, recognizing benefits afforded us and giving expression to our appreciation. Therefore, it's incumbent upon each Jewish citizen to participate in the democratic system which guards the freedoms we enjoy. The most fundamental responsibility incumbent on each individual is to register and to vote. Therefore, I urge all members of the Jewish community to fulfill their obligation by registering as soon as possible and by voting. By this, we express our appreciation and contribute to the continued security of our community. Signed, M. Feinstein. I saw this as vestiges of the fear that Rav Moshe had that America, and you can see it in a number of his tshuvas about doctors responding on Shabbos. He had a fear that, you know, it might turn into what he experienced in Lubon.
I disagree with you. I disagree. I think the Greeners had, of course, especially once it came to communist Russia, like Rav Moshe, had a tremendous sense of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the United States for giving us opportunity for freedom. I think we don't have anymore because we are raised here and we're cynical. And since Watergate, nobody actually believes in government as being a positive force because of all the nastiness and crime which was exposed at the time. But I believe that the people, the immigrants, actually had a sincere appreciation of what this was compared to what they came from. And they really meant that this is something which we should appreciate. And the fact that we don't appreciate it today is our cynical nature.
With downloads approaching the million mark, an archival library numbering in the thousands, the Yeshiva of Newark podcast has been striving to continuously upgrade our content, professionalize our audio sound, along with altering approaches in light of much appreciated listener feedback. I firmly believe that a niche has been carved out that resonates with many on the wide spectrum of observant Jews. This explains why we continually rank high in independent online lists of top Yeshiva podcasts. That proud edifice is in real danger of toppling and disappearing. We need the help of our listeners to continue to record, edit, to promote a product that has been a balm and instructor to so many. Just $36 as a minimum donation from 1,000 of you out there will keep us afloat as a Newark of straight, intelligent, humorous discussion, lectures, debate, and inquiry, while the destructive waters of ignorance and identity politics, cyberbullying, crash around us. Your generous contributions will seal and galvanize this ark till it comes to a satisfying rest in an era of Moyer Tzdeya, heralding Mashiach, B'mheira, B'yameinu, Amen. But I think Rav Moshe's encouragement to vote isn't just, it's more than the words of Hakaras HaTov. I think he was the safety. He is worried. I think he's worried that if the Jews are seen as a non-voting bloc, they seem like they don't care.
I don't see it.
They could be targeted. Rav Meir, what do you make of this?
Oh my goodness. I don't know where to begin. Should I go to the great contradiction here of Jewish political advocacy? Do we believe in freedom of religion? Do we believe in American freedoms as an absolute value, or do we believe in them as a way to defang the non-Jew? So again, that's the first thing that brings me up short here, that it seems we're telling the non-Jews something which we really don't support ourselves. And the Torah does not seem to be a First Amendment-esque document. Maybe that great contradiction is morally correct. For a small tribe, you have to be creative in the tactics you employ, and even if they're morally contradictory, you have to do them anyway because you're a small tribe. That's one thing. I don't believe that voting influences much of anything. I believe that whoever controls education and media runs the show, and the Republicans are simply heading in that direction at a slower speed. So I don't think voting Republican does anything other than slowing down a process, which is inevitable due to the total control of media and education.
When you also agree with me, though, that where we live, New York and New Jersey, our vote has pretty much been determined. I think every single political pundit has said that it's only the seven battleground states. Everything else is already in the can for whether it's for Trump or Harris.
Mayor Rabbi Yosef had to leave, but I did dig up from 4 years ago a discussion that he and I had about the election, Biden versus Trump. And he made his case of why Biden was the choice that the B'nai Torah element should vote for. And I think it's interesting, considering what has occurred in the last 4 years, especially with the ascension of Kamala. Now, I did speed this up. So those of you who are listening, and you are listening to us normally at some sort of higher speed, what you're going to hear for the next couple of minutes is already on a high speed. So you should lower your speeds to hear the next couple of minutes, which I think are interesting in retrospect.
Anybody in our age range, near or around 60, would be the same not to vote for Biden, because Biden is promising, or he's going to attempt to start Medicare at age 60. Besides that, New York State, under Trump, anybody who lives there, certainly myself, lost thousands and thousands of dollars, or contains thousands and thousands of dollars, because Trump decided to take revenge against Democratic states and cap our local property and state deductions from federal taxes at $10,000, even though my property tax alone living in in the corrupt state of Muncie is over $20,000 a year. So besides that, my wages have not gone up as a teacher under Trump since the past 4 years, from other jobs. And I have not seen any economic booms from this fellow Trump. I've only seen losses. I only see future devastation. So I don't see how anybody sane can vote for Trump unless they're billionaires. I saw a quote this week, he said from an American Jewish Week in 2012. I forgot who the writer was, but he wrote, I would not phrase it this way, I think it's a bit racist, but he wrote that the Orthodox Jews live like Puerto Ricans, but vote like billionaires. In other words, they want all the programs and all the subsidies, which fortunately I don't get. And at the same time, they vote for Republicans who want to abolish all these subsidies and all these programs. So in enlightened economic self-interest, if nothing else, the person to vote for is Biden and the Democrats, not the Republicans.
Wow, you surprised me a little bit. First of all, I want to tell you that it's going to make a difference anyway, because there is such a predominant Trump has no chance of getting New York or where I live in New Jersey. So our vote is basically meaning it's going to go the state based on electoral college is going to go Democrat anyway. So anyway, all this, but I really have to say, I feel bad for you. I'm not exactly in any greater boat than you are. I am surprised that you feel that despite what many Orthodox people are saying, that Trump's tremendous stand with the state of Israel, his dedication to Jewish causes, preaching Jerusalem is the undivided capital, the Iran. Nuclear deal, is this never going to happen under Trump? And what about all the violence that's happening in the cities, whether you want to call it social unrest or peaceful marches that devolve into violence because of reactions?
That's hilarious. It's it would be hilarious. It wasn't so sad. I love the way the Trump campaign goes around with the trumpeting the violence as Biden's America. Hello, who's the president today? Is Biden the president? No, Trump is the president. He's having on his watch because of his failed policies. And they're not going to get better in the next, unless he wants to start some war, which I think he'll do. They're not going to get better in his next round in the next 4 years.
I see. So you actually believe that the
humanism in the middle of the screen, which has no
idea. I 100%.
No principles, has no ideas, has no clue what to do about anything, unless he has no, except unless the basis of what his advisors tell him. Yeah, but have advisors like Kushner, tell him be nice to Israel. The advisors like Abby Cannon, be bad to Israel. Don't think he's advising
him. I'm asking that it is a bazillion odds that this man is our president. I am asking, and I think that I've been saying it for years, and I'm on public record about how ridiculous he is, a ridiculous buffoon, and you're right in the middle, and definitely, I don't know if he's a Bukhashin, but he does, he has good doctors that are helping him out.
Yes, the fake
man. He has a doctor helping him out on that. I guess the question is, we know that the Jewish press and other many, I don't know what they call them, the Orthodox publications. All right. They're saying that America is evolving. We talked about it a couple weeks ago with when we talked about the move to Israel, it's true or not. So here you are basically saying that every press has self-interest, and definitely Biden will definitely be a greater choice. I personally believe, and again, I'll say it on record, that maybe in the last 4 years, I think we're probably looking more at President Kamala Harris.
Fine. I'll send it Medicare at 60.
What?
Fine, we'll send it Medicare at 60.
Okay, so that's really what it's about. Yeah, I'm open to news, so I'm happy with, especially since we're living under this year. But again, I'll just tell you one thing that bothers me. I don't think you can say, as much as I feel Trump is spoon, mushness, and everything, sure, we could say all, he definitely fumbled the ball. But who knows why there's 180,000 people dead? To say that Trump is the reason 180,000 people are dead, I mean, the Democrats have really been, I think, guilty of overstating the case as well. Trump is, right 180,000 people dead, that's laid out of Trump's feet. I don't think you can say that. You're right, I think the way he punishes states that don't fall in line with him is ugly and terrible. And look, we'll see. Mirza Shema, you know, as you say, all politics is local. So I hear reason, but you haven't responded to what I said, because I don't think it's going to make a difference how you vote anyway. I don't know if you should risk, I know you're not as old as me, maybe you shouldn't risk going to the polls. You're already sending in your write-in ballot already? You're sending in your mail?
I don't think it's available.
Yeah, I think your wife's going to be unhappy with your choice, because I think you probably would have gotten more friend with her by sending her in, President.
I don't think so.
Yeah. She's probably better than Kamala Harris, though, I think.
Yeah.
I think she had a chance.
Maybe if you write in New Jersey, I'll write in New York, maybe in the final term.
Yeah, well, you know, look, I think it's still fine that you must use World Report cover feature of how she turned around the swamp in Washington as well.
Rabbi Yosef thought that Biden would be the candidate for Yungalite, Hevra, who weren't making a lot of money because of all the government doleouts and the fact that Medicare would kick in earlier and there'd be much more benefits. You still believe that voting for the president doesn't make a difference much either way?
Well, I said what I said before. I stand by it, which is that Trump has done something interesting. He has convinced the sane half of America, and I'll define that soon. He's convinced them that the media educational system and most of their own government is their enemy. And he has unified them around this social analysis. Now, he doesn't mean, I don't think, anything beyond a bare minimum of what he says. But he stumbled onto this, and he has brought together a unification of those who sense things have derailed. And this will be his lasting legacy. He himself will do not much of anything, perhaps slow down the impending suicide. But in that sense, he has done something. Americans know media and education, sane Americans know the media and education are their enemies. And those who vote Democrat believe that media and education are them. They are media and education. So in that sense, there is some significance. Trump, in his heart of hearts, is a liberal in the classical sense of the term. In other words, if we look at the past 250 years of world history, there are two teams. There is the team of tradition, centered in God, community, continuity, history. And there is the team that seeks at first liberation, and today sort of seeks, I think, nihilism. But Trump is on that other team. He doesn't really have a coherent counter-revolutionary worldview. So in that sense, he really can't offer opposition in the areas where it's most important, education, family, and so forth, because his heart is really on the other side. And that's why he's completely abandoned his anti-legitimatization of homosexuality. All these issues, he moves easily because in his heart, he's not of the traditional world. So I don't think he can be its defender. He plays a role as a unifier.
I mean, when would you have said would have been a significant presidential election then?
You go back to the beginning of America, I think both Jefferson and Hamilton are revolutionary figures, and this is supposed to be of great significance, the Federalists versus the Democratic Republicans. But I don't think it is, because both see the political realm as severed from religion and identity. You know, in a vague sense, Goldwater, Taft, I mean, we want to say Hoover maybe, but again, Coolidge perhaps. But again, these are very limited figures in terms of their grasp of what's taking place. Whereas Coolidge was, in his essence, a part of traditional middle America. But I don't think he understood it in a coherent sense.
It's sort of a, you know, quite a dark, I wouldn't call it a shroud, but something like that in terms of, you know, what is for many of our listeners, probably considered, you know, this great involvement in life. From your perspective, it's all smoke and mirrors, really.
Yes, I very much so. It's a sham. In other words, societal change takes place not in the voting booth. It takes place in education and today media, and it takes place throughout the past 200-300 years. So you cannot unleash the French and American revolutions and not expect that the traditionalists are going to be bazaitiked. So, no, I don't think that a traditional worldview survives except in remnants in Western Europe and North America. Now, again, this goes back to what we said before about the Jews. In other words, Orthodox Jewry has seceded from the realm. We have abjured the realm. We live in our own world. What the realm does, we view as simply a means to our own economic or zoning laws ends. But we don't look at the realm as incarnating anything we believe in. So I think that that's true for all traditional people. For anybody who has an Orthodox religion or has a sense of peoplehood or continuity, clearly the past 250 years have been the erasing of that, right?
You know, I think that societies that garner their identity, societies that have a strong religious base, that have a text and leaders who teach that text and inculcate that, we have a lot less of a need for any sort of mythologizing of founding fathers, of really, you know, dying on our patriotism. The Jews clearly have recognized, and I think, you know, whether they say it or not, some of them actually say it very openly, this is the place that God has used to allow like Ramosha wrote, this safe haven to do our thing, but not necessarily to buy in to you know, everything else.
Is such a person a legitimate citizen? Is indifference to the realm a legitimate form of citizenship? That's the question, I think.
Yeah, and which really gets us back to what we were talking about originally, the insulated communities that we were talking about, the ones that weren't affected by events in Eretz Yisrael or here, for that matter.
No, but let's put a caveat on that. I don't think that the modern Orthodox world is any better in these areas. In terms of European realms.
There have been enough, you know, scandals in the Frumvelt in terms of shirking tax payments and other things. Do you don't think that in the modern Orthodox world there's a greater sense of citizenship in terms of playing by the rules?
With a modern Orthodox Jews, again, those who reflect at all, very few do, but that tiny number of modern Orthodox Jews, what would they say is good about America? It's free. It's freedom of religion. They'd say the same things, right? America has gradually moved, not gradually, pretty rapidly, from being an organic nation to being a civil nation. And Jews, not incorrectly, Jews see a civic realm as better for them than an organic realm. It's an existential dilemma, because we don't really think organic realms are inferior when it comes to our own selves. We want an ethno-religious state in Israel. But we're hooked on this dilemma. What do you do when you're living in Gentile nations? So for 200 plus years, we've advocated a desacralization, a identification of what the realm is. So it's almost inevitable. What else are we going to do? Are we going to become counter-revolutionaries advocating for Catholic monarchist France? I mean, we're on the other side of that battle. I think we're almost doomed to be on the other side of that battle.
This is obviously a topic that you are have held forth on on numerous occasions.
A topic that I've suffered from over the past 60 years.
Yes, yes. And yet, you also can't help but be fascinated by what's going on, right? You still find yourself captivated by the cavalcade.
Two thoughts on that. One is, in order to maintain one's own sense of the true and the good, and not let seepage take place, one has to understand what is taking place. The liberalization of yeshivish and chassidish chinuch is because we don't understand the essence of our own communities and their commitments, and therefore the liberal world seeps in. But the other point, I would simply quote my philosopher mentor, Professor Thomas Molnar, and I would say to him, so what is our task now in history? And he said in this thick Hungarian accent, to bear witness. So I'm trying to bear witness to what is taking place. Just simply, how can a human being not bear witness? How can you disengage to the point where you're not living where you're living?
our listeners will hear this, you know, as we move into the election. What's your sense from, you know, combing the what you're hearing and
Yankees Dodgers, you mean? It does seem that the Trumpster has regained the upper hand here. And what's going to be interesting is what the Big Brother's dominant forces, what will they do with a Trump victory? I mean, this fascist neo-Nazi movement, as Hillary describes it, what are they going to do and say when he wins? The majority of people are fascists.
I'm worried about the filtering effect of what the media is saying, what it will do on the streets. Are we talking about a weeks of civil unrest?
Yeah, could be. Could be.
I think if Kamala wins, I think the attitude of the Trumpites and the way they acted in the wake of the assassination attempt in Butler, Pennsylvania, I think is a pretty good indicator of the acceptance and the Menschlichkeit of what will happen. There's going to be definitely Trump will cry foul. They'll definitely be talking again about how, you know, things were stolen.
Trump is like Lou Albano. He never lost a match which was legit.
But the question has not been asked to Harris and Waltz. Will they accept? What will they do if it happens? And it's interesting how, you know, it's such an obvious point that should be asked from them. And there are others that talk about a health crisis, a psychological health crisis, that we must stop Trump because otherwise there's going to be so many Americans who don't feel a connection to their country anymore. I think a little bit of a dose of your reality would maybe cure them. But most people don't have a national identity outside of being an American.
The left is it used to be a term that the carnival barkers and pro wrestlers would have. The left is a mark for their own gimmick. In other words, what they put forth as this gimmick, you know, the German-American Bundes Madison Square Garden, they kind of fall for it themselves a little bit or a lot. So, yeah, I agree with you. They may go crazy. We should be zolche to the hashpahs from the yontif should continue on.
Chassidus Sfarim tell us that dancing with the Torah is a way that should hopefully result in the simcha of limudat Torah, the simcha of hasagas haTorah. The Friedrich Rebbe had said that as well, that hakofa is also used in the Talmud as getting things on credit.
The Kenveri is makif up in kasa, you mean?
So it's a hakofa means I don't pay for it now, but I get the items, and yet there's a trust that I will pay. And I think that's part of what we were makabel, hopefully, is a real aliyah. And now it's time to pay. Throughout this winter, we're going to pay and actually fulfill what we were given by hakofa. We'll hopefully catch you next week as we survey the landscape of a country still on life support. Take care, everybody. We'll catch you next week.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I hope you liked what you heard. If you did, please take a moment to share this or any of the many episodes available on our platform with friends in order to help grow our community. Until next time, Shalom.